It is a return command performance engagement, and she was great the last time, and I know that Dr. Rastogi will be great this time. Dr. Sheena Rastogi, a terrific, talented cardiologist at Deborah Heart and Lung Center, board certified in cardiology and internal medicine. Dr. Rastogi earned her medical degree and completed a residency in internal medicine at Rutgers, New Jersey, Medical School in Newark, New Jersey, went on to complete a fellowship in cardiology at Northwell Health, North Shore University Hospital in New Hyde Park, New York. Dr. Rastogi's special interests include clinical cardiology, echocardiography, and nuclear cardiology. And Dr. Rastogi has participated in numerous clinical research projects. Dr. Rastogi, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
It is great to be with you. Our topic this half hour on Deborah Heart and Lung Center presents Dr. Sheena Rastogi is Living Heart Healthy in 2026. So let's get right into it, Dr. Rastogi. People often start the new year with resolutions, and we know that, you know, I'm going to lose weight, I'm going to exercise more, yeah, I'm going to stop smoking, I'm going to do all these things. How does someone begin a true journey towards heart health?
So when we talk about heart health, what we're really talking about is lowering the risk of heart attack, stroke, and heart failure, while also feeling stronger and more energetic. So the American Heart Association uses something called Life Essential 8. So that's what you should reflect on. That includes, number one, eating healthy. Number two, staying active. Three, avoiding nicotine. Four, getting good sleep. Five, keeping a healthy weight. Six, managing your blood pressure. Seven, managing your cholesterol. And eight, finally, managing your blood sugar. So if you mean the more of these habits you're able to maintain, the lower rate of cardiovascular disease you're going to have over time. But I don't want to, like, I know that's a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't want to overwhelm people, especially since it's the beginning of the year. So, you know, what I want to emphasize is that the key is to not overhaul everything at once. Start small and specific. So instead of saying something nebulous, like, I'm going to get healthy this year, you know, that's not specific enough. Say something to yourself like, I will walk 20 minutes after dinner 3 days a week. Or I'm going to swap soda for water during the week. Those are manageable habits, you know?
Yep. And I was just going to follow up, Dr. Rastogi, because if you set something that's so ambitious, it's so big that you just can't, you set yourself up for failure. So it's much better to achieve something rather than to try for the moon and you don't even get out of your own driveway.
I know. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Small, sustainable habits. I think that should be everyone's goal for 2026. Just make good habits for your life.
And just to share a relatable story, this is probably now 15 years. I made a decision that I was eliminating soda completely. And I wasn't like crazy drinking soda, but I drank more than I should have. And I just decided I'm going to stop drinking soda. Well, it was one of the greatest things, Dr. Rastogi, that I ever did. I lost five pounds within a short while. And then I tried a sip like a long time later, and then it didn't even taste good. So I don't know if that's rewiring the brain or what it means, but actually something that I enjoyed, now I don't even crave it. I don't want it. And so that was a goal that I felt was manageable. It wasn't me saying I'm going to lose 30 pounds in 30 days, you know, something that you're going to fail. So anyhow, you inspired me to mention that personal story of my own. I want to bring up that I also despise, and it is smoking. I lost both my parents to smoking. I despise it. I don't want to be around it. I know what it does. How does smoking affect the cardiovascular system? And let's break it down into two questions, Dr. Rastogi: smoking cigarettes and also this dreadful vaping that some people think is good for them.
So I'm sorry to hear about your parents.
Thank you.
Smoking, everybody knows this, like smoking is not good for you. It can harm your heart and your blood vessels in many ways. You can have heart disease. There's a risk of stroke, lung cancer, the whole shebang.
Yep.
Specifically what happens is that you've got tobacco smoke that irritates the lining of your arteries. Remember, that's over 300 chemicals in a single cigarette. So obviously it's going to cause some damage. So when you have irritation to the lining of your arteries, that makes cholesterol more likely to stick. So that's how you form plaques in your heart, the blood supply of your heart. Smoking also increases your blood pressure. And it could make your blood more prone to clotting. So smokers, they have roughly 2 to 4 times the risk of heart disease and stroke compared with non-smokers. So it's a very profound effect. Vaping, as you just mentioned, is, you know, also I think a lot of people have this misconception that vaping is safer, but it's not. It's not harmless. E-cigarettes, they deliver nicotine and these ultra-fine particles that can affect blood vessel function, blood pressure, and even your heart rhythm, potentially.
Isn't there, Dr. Rastogi, also a like a popcorn lung that you can get from vaping?
Yeah, I was just going to say that. So if you're not somebody who gets skeeved out, then go to Google Images and Google vaping lung, New England Journal of Medicine, to see exactly what the CT scan of somebody what the CT scan looks like of somebody who vapes. It's a lot of damage that can incur from regular vaping. It's not harmless at all.
We are visiting with the fabulous Dr. Sheena Rastogi, cardiologist extraordinaire from Deborah Heart and Lung Center. And I just urge everyone, as you listen to today's topic, and if you're experiencing anything, don't suffer in silence. Please make an appointment. You can call Deborah Heart and Lung Center at 609-621-2080 or on any digital device on their website. It's really easy to navigate to scheduling. You'll see the hyperlink right to schedule an appointment. It's a red block on the website at demanddeborah.org. 609-621-2080 or demanddeborah.org. This is also a biggie because, I mean, it's epidemic in our country. People with extra weight, obesity even. What are the dangers of having excess weight, and why is it important to maintain a healthy weight?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. Thank you for that question. And it's the usual suspects, right? Excess weight can place stress on the heart and can result in things like high blood pressure, abnormal cholesterol, type 2 diabetes, and even sleep apnea. So each of the things that I just mentioned independently raise the risk of heart attack, stroke, and heart failure. And it's because obesity, it promotes chronic inflammation and insulin resistance. And these two factors accelerate plaque buildup in the blood supply of your heart and the arteries of your heart. So yeah, those are the effects. But listen, the encouraging news is that meaningful improvement occurs even with modest weight loss. So if you just lose 5 to 10% of your body weight, that can improve your blood pressure, blood sugar, and cholesterol, and reduce long-term cardiovascular risk. So again, all of this is hinging on durable habits, balanced nutrition, more movement, better sleep, good stress management. Don't resort to extreme crash dieting, right? You need a structured program. For some people, a structured program is structured programs are appropriate. And, you know, those conversations are actually worth having with, you know, your doctor. So, you know.
So important.
I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, oh, you did. Perfectly. So important. Dr. Rastogi, what is a heart-healthy diet? Because people hear that. They read about, heart-healthy. What is a heart-healthy diet? How does it benefit the heart?
So a heart-healthy diet, the focus is on overall eating patterns rather than just single specific foods. So what I usually counsel my patients about is the Mediterranean-style diet. That consistently has shown the strongest evidence. So the Mediterranean diet, it emphasizes vegetables, fruits, whole grains, legumes, nuts, seeds, and healthy fats like avocados, olive oil. It also includes fish and lean proteins in moderation. You should also, while doing, eating these foods, you should also be limiting processed meats, sugary drinks, like you mentioned, simple carbohydrates, and high sodium foods. So the Mediterranean style diet is something that we emphasize. And when you are able to establish, you know, those kind of eating habits for yourself, you know, the consequences are, you know, really good. You know, it helps lower your LDL cholesterol. LDL is the bad cholesterol, so you want that to be low. This diet can improve your blood pressure. It can stabilize your blood sugar, and it reduces overall inflammation. So over time, what that means is that it's going to translate into fewer heart attacks and strokes. So
important.
Practical changes, you know, practical changes. That's what it is.
Dr. Rastogi, alcohol, because a lot of people, you know, deal with this. Can reducing alcohol consumption help the heart? And if so, how?
Yes, this is a very important question, because once upon a time, research actually did suggest that, oh, maybe a moderate intake of alcohol could protect the heart. You know, a lot of people thought that, you know, it's the antioxidants and, let's say, wine that could, you know, help prevent heart disease, but that could not be farther from the truth. There are newer studies now that have challenged that idea. So, you know, when lifestyle and genetic factors are accounted for, the benefit that you may potentially reap from, like, a glass of wine every night, that benefit becomes smaller and it even disappears. So higher alcohol intake, meanwhile, we know that it raises your blood pressure. It contributes to weight gain. It can trigger things like atrial fibrillation, which is this really common arrhythmia that people can get that can be difficult to treat sometimes. And it increases the risk of stroke and cardiomyopathy, which is overall structural heart disease. So cutting back on alcohol is important. It can lower your blood pressure, improve sleep, and, you know, support your weight control, reduce arrhythmia risk. So the current recommendations are, if you're an adult and you choose to drink, if you're a woman, you should have no more than one standard drink per day. And if you're a man, it should be no more than two. But, you know, generally speaking, less is better. So that would be my sincere advice.
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of the zero category. Zero is what I like to hear. But I know what you're saying. And again, that's another area where if you tell someone, look, it doesn't have to be total abstinence, but you really have to moderate it, you know, again, I think that can become achievable. Whereas if someone was told, I can never, like, if you love lobster, if you got told, I can never have lobster again. But moderation, right?
So moderation is the key. Absolutely. Once in a while is okay.
Yep.
Socially is okay. Yep. But, you know, try to adhere to as less as possible, you know.
Great advice. That's why you are Dr. Sheena Rastogi, cardiologist. We do have a guest listener question that wrote me, and it's a good question, and I'll pose it now. We can talk about it. We only take one break. We're going to take it right now, and then we'll be uninterrupted for the remainder of the time with Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents. Dr. Sheena Rastogi, cardiologist, living heart healthy in 2026. Harry, please ask Dr. Rastogi about heart murmurs. My doctor told me yesterday that I have one. My brothers had one their whole lives. Does it run in families? What's the deal? I have no chest pain, no shortness of breath. I walk 3 miles a day, feel perfectly fine, but this individual, and I believe they are 63 years old, they now have been told they have a heart murmur, and if you don't mind addressing that when we come back, and then from there, we continue. It's like one question after the other, so important, the importance of moving, keep moving in 2026, how much weekly exercise is recommended to keep the heart healthy. So much to cover with Dr. Rastogi when we come back in just a few minutes. My pleasure to present Dr. Sheena Rastogi, cardiologist at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. And the topic this half hour is a heart healthy new year. And the information thus far imparted has just been absolutely masterclass. And we continue with a number of other important questions and content. But if you don't mind doing like an on-air consult to our gentleman guest listener who has just found out that he has a heart murmur, what do you say to that?
This is a very good question. This is a question we get very often. So I will start by answering the question, what is a heart murmur? We can start there. A heart murmur is a physical exam finding. So basically, it's this extra heart sound that we hear when we listen to the heart with a stethoscope. So instead of the normal lub-dub, it's a whooshing sound, like as blood is moving through the heart. So the next question I think I should answer is, are they dangerous? Are heart murmurs, you know, something to worry about? And here's the important part I want to emphasize. There are many heart murmurs that are completely harmless. So we call these innocent or physiologic murmurs. So kids can have them, pregnant women can have them, athletes, and it often doesn't mean anything at all. So don't automatically think that, oh, something is wrong. It just means that we should be listening a little bit more carefully. A heart murmur matters, though, when there are symptoms. So if you're experiencing like shortness of breath, chest pain, fainting, or leg swelling, that's definitely a reason to get checked out. Because a murmur can be a clue that maybe a heart valve is too tight or too leaky, or that the blood is flowing in some unusual way. That's when we want to investigate further. So then the next step, if we're concerned, is to order something called an echocardiogram, which is nothing but an ultrasound of the heart. It's painless. There's no contrast. There's no radiation. It's very simple, and it tells us exactly what's going on. So the big takeaway is that most murmurs are not dangerous, and the ones that can often be are monitored or treated very effectively. So it's a physical exam finding. It's a sign that, you know, maybe something needs to be evaluated, but it's certainly not a reason to panic immediately.
If you had a murmur with no symptoms, you feel fine, have no other issues, versus you have a murmur and you do have symptoms, two different worlds, right?
Well, it depends. It's not a very easy question to answer. I think that if you have a murmur, you really should discuss that with, you know, your physician, your primary care doctor, your cardiologist, because it depends on the type of murmur that they're hearing. So I would definitely have that conversation with a doctor to decide what are the next steps. Should we explore this further by getting an echocardiogram, which is not a hard thing to do. It's very easy. Or should we just sit and wait? It's probably nothing to really worry about. That's like a decision that your physician needs to make for you.
Good enough. And I do want to give the listener an opportunity to call 609-621-2080 or go to the website demanddebora.org. Question asked, question answered well. Should we aim to move more in the new year? How much weekly exercise is recommended to keep the heart healthy?
Yes, physical activity is a very powerful tool. So right now, the guidelines recommend at least 150 minutes of moderate aerobic exercise, like brisk walking, for example. Or if you're somebody who likes something a little bit more intense, like running or cycling, 75 minutes per week of vigorous activity. So cardio plus muscle strengthening exercises done on 2 days per week. Those are the recommendations. So if you are able to manage these things, then, and you do it regularly, these things can lower your blood pressure, it improves cholesterol, helps with weight control, it reduces insulin resistance, it reduces inflammation. So people who are physically active, they do tend to have significantly lower risk of cardiovascular disease and premature death. But again, movement does not have to be complicated. No one's asking you to run the New York City Marathon tomorrow. You know, even like a short walk counts. It's the biggest benefit occurs when you transition from doing almost nothing to doing something regularly. So that's what I wanted to emphasize most with that question.
So good. The topic this half hour on Debora Heart and Lung Center presents Dr. Sheena Rastogi is Heart Healthy New Year. If you're inactive right now or you have a heart condition, should you talk to your provider before starting an exercise routine?
That's a really good question, actually. I think for most people, some movement is safe and it's beneficial, like we discussed. But yes, you know, if you're an individual with a known heart condition, like if you've had a heart attack in the past, if you have valvular disease, if you have heart failure, or if you're having symptoms that are limiting, like chest pain or shortness of breath, if you've fainted, those things are a little concerning. So you should speak with a clinician before starting anything vigorous, any kind of vigorous regimen. And there are individuals actually who would benefit from supervised programs like cardiac rehab, for example. So definitely it's a conversation worth having with your primary care physician or with your cardiologist.
You covered, Dr. Rastogi, the good cholesterol and the bad cholesterol. As a standalone question, we often hear about and we're reminded to know our numbers. So what numbers do we need to monitor? How often should they be checked?
Yes. So the parameters that we all consider are blood pressure, cholesterol, blood sugar, weight, and waist circumference. Blood pressure can be a little bit tricky. So I'll address that first. Generally speaking, your blood pressure should be below 120, as close to 120 over 80 as possible. Your risk increases as it rises above 130 over 80. That's why we're always emphasizing 130 over 80 or less as a goal for people who have pre-existing hypertension or high blood pressure. But it's more nuanced than that. I think if you're a person who has kidney disease, advanced kidney disease, if you have heart failure, or if you are an elderly individual who is able to ambulate but you do require some assistance, your blood pressure targets are going to be tailored to your lifestyle. They should be tailored to your needs. So maybe your targets would be different. That's something that, again, you need to discuss with your cardiologist. But generally speaking, if you are a person who doesn't have very many risk factors, if you don't have any underlying diseases, then aim for as close to 120 over 80 as possible.
Before you go to another number, a follow-up sure. on the blood pressure. Is this, uh-huh. and I know this is a generalization, but I thought I've read and maybe even have discussed with you in the past and other interviews that we've done over the past 34, 35 years with Deborah, that as we get older, is it common for blood pressure to raise as you get older?
Yeah, I do think that there is something to that. I think older people do tend to have more uncontrolled blood pressure, and it could be a function of many things, inactivity, just bad habits. But yeah, that is something that we do see.
Fair enough. You please continue about the other know our numbers.
So as far as, your cholesterol is concerned, if you are somebody who is, again, you don't have any underlying conditions, for the general public, your LDL, which is your bad cholesterol, you want that to be less than 100. But if you're somebody who has heart disease, or if you have something equivalent, some kind of overall blood circulation issue, or if you have a history of stroke, your targets are going to be more aggressive. So for those individuals, we're aiming for an LDL of less than 70, sometimes even less than 50. It really depends. Those are the numbers I think you should really reflect on. You should definitely discuss it with your doctor. And then blood sugar tests. There's this one blood sugar test that helps detect prediabetes and diabetes. It's called the hemoglobin A1C. So that's something to definitely reflect on. That number is important. Hemoglobin A1C is very simple. It's just an average of what your blood sugars have been over the past 3 months. So it comes in the form of a percentage. So 6.5% or higher is diabetes. That is a diagnosis of diabetes. Anything between 5.7% and 6.4%, that's pre-diabetes. And pre-diabetes is a risk factor just as much as diabetes is for heart disease. So the hemoglobin A1C is a test that I often order for my patients. It's information that is very helpful, and it helps me decide, where to place you in terms of your cardiovascular risk. So that's definitely something to think about.
This next question is one of my favorite that we've had the chance to talk with you about over the years, and it is the importance of seeing your healthcare provider even when you feel well, because there's, I think, a propensity for people to only go to their provider, healthcare provider, when they don't feel well. They don't really think about, hey, I'm feeling great. You know, why should I go when I'm feeling well? But isn't it important for the doctor or the healthcare provider to, whether you're talking about, you know, terms like baseline and things like that, isn't it important for the doctor or the healthcare provider to see the patient when they're feeling well?
Yes, absolutely. This is a very important thing that you've mentioned, actually, because the major risk factors for heart disease, they can actually be pretty silent for many years, right? So if you have high blood pressure, I'm sure this is very relatable to many people listening, you know, if you have high blood pressure, if you have high cholesterol, even if you have diabetes, you might not even feel it, right? But you don't feel it, but you might have it. And it's still something that portends a risk onto you. So preventative visits are very important because it allows us to make that those assessments of those risk factors and to get ahead of the curve so that we can manage them. And we take all of those things into consideration, plus your family history. What are your lifestyle? What is your lifestyle? What are your habits? What are your labs? And, you know, early action against any kind of abnormality that we see in your history, it helps reduce the likelihood of any future heart events. So it's very important. Preventative visits also it avails us the opportunity to talk to our patients about mental health and sleep and, you know, appropriate screening for like age and gender. So yeah, absolutely. Even if you feel well, a preventative visit can only help.
Dr. Rastogi, it has flown by so fast. We're basically down to the last minute. Let's try to squeeze in two very important topics that you could merge into one terrific answer that you always give. Medication management, why is that important? And also the importance of the amount and the quality of sleep.
Yeah. So for medication, it's very important to adhere to medications because the medications that we prescribe, those have been proven in clinical trials to reduce heart attacks and stroke and death. They stabilize plaque. They, you know, reduce strain on the heart. They lower dangerous blood pressure. So they're so important. So stopping or skipping medications can lead to worsening risk over time. And I understand, like, if cost or side effects or confusion as to how to go about taking even these medications, if those are barriers, talk openly with your cardiologist about that because we can help you. We can work with you. Often prescriptions can be simplified. They can be changed, and we could support you even financially. We can, you know, go through insurance or whatever you need. You know, so the goal is not to be on, obviously the goal is not to be on, you know, unnecessary medication. It's to reduce long-term risk. That's what we care about the most. And then as far as sleep health is concerned, I love my sleep. It's an active repair time for the cardiovascular system. So if you have short sleep, like less than 6 hours per night, for example, it can increase your risk for high blood pressure, obesity, and diabetes. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention the usual suspect, which is sleep apnea, you know, because repeated breathing interruptions cause oxygen levels to drop. And sharp blood pressure surges that can damage your vessels over time. It increases your risk for atrial fibrillation, which is something that I mentioned earlier, a very common arrhythmia. So, you know, most adults, they benefit from a solid 7 to 9 hours of high quality sleep nightly. So,
Dr. Rastogi, it was a privilege, just absolutely fabulous to make an appointment. You can call 609-621-2080 or demanddeborah.org. Until next time, Dr. Rastogi, thank you.
Thank you.
Such a great job.